Bro, welcome back to Biff, bro. It's the podcast where we talk about superhero TV shows, movies, and people with bows and arrows, because that's what we do. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined, as always, by the rest of the Tracksuit Mafia. John Moltz is here. Hi, John.
Gonna do a little catch release.
That's a good one. It's one of Guy English's old favorites. Hey, Guy English is also here. Hi, Guy.
I don't get that joke, but that's not a knife. This is a knife.
We are.
Did you watch The Right Thing?
Yeah. Crocodile Dundee is next week, just so you know.
Yeah. Oh, no. Okay. Yeah. I don't know why I went with that. It seems to fit with the Tracksuit Mafia for some reason.
Yeah, really? Yeah, it does seem like something.
It's of a type.
Like, that
it's
would happen type to them.
Yeah.
My tracksuit. So we are here to discuss the first two episodes of Hawkeye, now airing on Disney Plus. Normally, we would be covering, there's one Legends of Tomorrow episode before they've gone on hiatus as of this week. We'll be back on Thursday to cover that and episode 3 of Hawkeye. But today, we're going to cover episodes 1 and 2, which both aired last Wednesday and sort of kicked off this 6-episode series. And I think John Moltz has volunteered as tribute to do a little bit of a recap, yeah. Given that it's 2 episodes.
Yeah. This so we is going to be a little long on the long side.
All right, settle in. Yeah,
I'll try and do it in one breath.
Oh, God, I can't wait to hold this over your head for the next 3 years.
I just enjoyed it so much. Then.
Yeah. Okay.
So we open on a flashback where we learn that Kate was living with her parents in New York during the incident. Bad time to be living there. Her parents were having financial troubles, and then the Chitauri attack. She sees Hawkeye fighting the Chitauri before she flees with her mom, and her father dies in the attack. Flash forward to now, when Kate is showing off her archery skills to her friends at college and accidentally destroys a bell tower. Clint and his children are watching Rogers the Musical, and Clint has to leave because it's so bad. And also, he's feeling sad. A guy in the bathroom bugs him for a selfie, and then he and his family ditch the musical for Christmas fun and have some Chinese food, where the owner says, Clint's money's no good here. Kate returns to her mother's apartment, where there are a lot of swords, because her boyfriend, Jack Tuscane, we'll talk about him later, I guess.
He's wearing a sword right under his nose. That guy. Yeah, exactly. That is an awesome mustache.
It's great. It is a good mustache. Yeah.
They're on their way to a holiday party where Kate is conveniently dressed like the help. Jack's uncle, Armand, spills the beans about Kate's mom and Jack being engaged. And he seems to have certain suspicions about her mom. Kate confronts her mother, then goes outside for some air where she meets Pizza Dog. She comes back in and hears Armand having a fight with her mother. She talks to her mom again, then goes and follows Armand down to the basement by posing as one of the waitstaff. Armand and Jack have words at this sort of meeting that's going on down there before a black market auction starts. The first item being a Triceratops skull. That was kind of neat. And then Kate gets found out by the head caterer and pretends to quit and make a getaway. She sees some Russian mobsters lurking outside, our good friends, the Tracksuit Mafia. The next item for sale is Ronin's sword, which they say was recovered from the wreckage of the Avengers compound. And now it retracts, apparently.
It did in the movie.
A feature previously.
Didn't? I thought it did in the movie.
I thought it did,
I don't
too,
think so. I think he... I anyway, it doesn't matter.
Who cares? Whatever. It's a goofy-ass sword anyway. Yeah, why do you have holes in your sword?
It needed to retract so that he could stick it in his pocket.
It's a metal lightsaber.
Yeah.
Right.
Jack wants it, but he can't bid as high as Armand. The third lot is Ronin's suit, but just then the Russians bust through the wall and start taking things. Jack walks off with the sword, and Kate suits up in Ronin's outfit. The mobsters are looking for a watch that was also recovered from the Avengers compound. Kate does pretty well against them, but she finally flees. The guy loading up the loot finds the watch, but is attacked by Pizza Dog. Kate knocks him out and chases after Pizza Dog, saving him from getting run over. And then she takes him to her apartment. She goes to Armand's house, and after finding that he has monogrammed butterscotch, dun, dun, dun,
important plot point
later. Yes, she finds him dead, stabbed in the gut. Hawkeye sees the Ronin on the news and heads out to investigate. Kate gets cornered by the Russians and locks herself in a car before someone starts taking them down. Clint drags her out of the car and they finally meet in the alley. Then we go to episode 2. Kate and Clint go to her apartment where she wants him to sign her bow, and we get some exposition. The tracksuit mafia shows up outside and throws some Molotov cocktails in. Clint catches one and throws it back. Kate shoots one out of a guy's hand. They escape, but have to leave the suit. They get some medical supplies and then go to Kate's aunt's place. Clint goes back to get the suit, but the police and fire department are there, and the suit is not. Clint takes note of a sticker on the fire truck for the New York City LARPers. He heads back to Kate's aunt's, does a quick Google search, and finds the suit has been swiped by Grills, who is different character than in the comic book, but it's the same.
Yeah, I think that they reuse the name. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tip and like the general, like, I just ran into you in the course of doing things. Yeah. Sort of vibe. Yeah.
Right. Clint sees his kids off to the airport. Lila is worried about him. Kate has to go to work. She reminds Clint that he's a role model for, you know, random people, nobody in particular. They exchange numbers, and she goes and has an awkward interaction with Jack and her mom. Clint goes to the New York City LARPers event, and the bouncer insists that he must participate if he wants to go in. He fights his way through the crowd, killing everyone, and gets to Grills. He lets Grills kill him to get the suit back, and they sort of become friends. That's probably going to come back.
The way that Grills kills him is the way that he finishes the final guy in Endgame.
I missed that. That's good.
Yeah, he dodges under it, like there's a parry, and then he dodges under it and slices his belly. Oh, yeah, it's what he does to kill a guy. Yeah,
right. So Kate gets a call from the police, who would like her to come downtown and answer some questions. Clint calls Laura and says he's going to use a little catch release on the tracksuits. At dinner, Jack is full of metaphors and dismissive comments for Kate. Kate challenges him to a sword fight, and he's game. He lets her win, which pisses her off, so she stabs at him when he has his mask up, and he disarms her handily. She tells her mom she thinks Jack killed Armand, and her mom seems more concerned about her. Jack offers Kate a butterscotch with Armand's logo on it, and she takes off. The tracksuits capture Clint, of course, because that's what he wanted. Kate tries calling him, but somebody else picks up and says he can't come to the phone. She logs onto Bishop's security system and tracks his phone. He's in a warehouse tied up momentarily. Clint wants to speak to their manager. The tracksuits think Kate is guy in costume. She comes crashing through the ceiling. They tie them both up. One of the tracksuits goes in the back and tells a woman, it's Echo, by the way, who is listening or feeling some loud music, that they have them both.
Dun, 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 dun,
dun. Different Archer.
Different Archer.
Yeah. Our pal Frank was asking, well, our pal, whatever. Hey, Frank. He was asking if we were going to cover this show on Biff, and it's like, dude, come on.
It's literally
an Archer show.
It's literally in our quiver, guys.
Superhero Archer show.
Yeah, come on.
We're getting back to our roots here.
Yeah, definitely. And happily so. I feel pretty good about this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, same. We'll get into. I have like several conspiracy.
Let's not jump to the end.
Okay. Yeah, I have several conspiracy corner things. Well, I don't know if we want to do that now or later, but.
Well, we can say Jack is his character is the swordsman.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the same name as the character, right?
Right.
It's the same.
Do you know what's awesome?
Too, right.
I took one look at that guy, like his first time he came on screen, and I'm like, oh, that's the swordsman.
Yeah, exactly.
I had to look him up. I wasn't sure. I mean, I've heard of the swordsman before, but I didn't really remember what he looked like per se. So,
yeah, I think I'd looked at Clint Barton backstory ish stuff reasonably recently, mostly because the show was coming out. So, like, it just sprung to mind. Plus, not a lot of guys with a giant mustache.
It's the mustache.
Him. Yeah. There's like maybe Batroc the Leaper from the comics, I think, has a mustache. Like, he's in that class of like weird and wacky dude.
Yeah.
One of the things I really, really, really loved was in the auction. It's what? Like he bids $300,000 for the sword, which, don't get me wrong, is a lot of money, but it's not James Bond level money. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Like, yeah, it's not it's millions. Like,
yeah, it's like a house. Yeah. Like, that's a lot. You're playing with a lot of money, but you're still like low stakes. And he taps out. He taps out around 450, which is like kind of gives you the
he's got limits.
The range and the limits, even though he thinks he's going to, and the guy tells him, like, you're not going to, you don't have that kind of money. But even then he taps out. And even that, that's a lot of money still, don't get me wrong. But for having an apartment on, what, Park Avenue, whatever the hell they were, in New York, that's expensive, right?
Like,
it's clear that she's got way more money than him. Like, the amount of money that you have that, you don't necessarily tap out at $300,000 on a...
Well, he seems like he's living off of her coattails.
That's it. Exactly. Or I just like the way it's set.
Or his there's something, evilness, you know? And something with his uncle as well, right? Like, there's a relationship there. I don't know about you guys, but like, there was a weird thing with like, so we are introduced at one point to the what is he, grandson, great grandson? Armand the seventh.
Little boy who's
Armand
like,
the seventh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blinky McBlinkerson. Like, that kid is like.
But
weird.
And there's something weird going on there, right? I mean, and I felt like, I don't know. I don't want to say clones, but it felt like a cloning thing, right? Like, maybe it's just an old guy cloning himself. It seems a little too out there for this show, but there's something weird going on there for sure.
There is. There's no way it's a clone, not in this show. Show has a even the look to it. That would actually be kind of hilarious. It's got a weirdness to it, like the way it's lit and rendered, sort of thing. Especially in that flashback scene, feels I don't know how to put it, like a little simplified. It's got like a gloss to it, and the artwork from the comic book that it's taken from has a very simplistic sort of like feel to
flat,
it. And I think
sort of matte view.
Think they're kind of doing. They're going for a similar feel, which is why you get a weirdo character like the seventh version of, what was his name?
Armand.
Yeah. Like, it's of that borderline mystical, like not mystical, but like fairy tale sort of take on stuff. Like,
they're not
close to reality, regular, but it's not quite reality.
They're not regular
folks. Right.
I mean, even though we're dealing with sort of the street level problems, right, with the mafia, or whatever, it's clear that there's like another level sort of up at the top. Elite echelons that something else is going on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we have any theories about the watch?
I assume it's Tony's, but
I
don't know.
The guess going around. I didn't go back and look at people point out that in Civil War he has the watch that turns into the armor like gauntlet. Thing, it's like, is it the same watch? I didn't go back
that tie into Armor Wars.
Right, which has sort of been running around as a theory. It's unclear where it went to me. Did the Russians end up with it, or
I think that guy. No, that guy still has it. She knocked him out, but he still had the watch.
I thought maybe Pizza Dog had like taken it or eaten it or something.
I think he just took off. He doesn't, unless he swallowed it, in which case you don't want it back.
Yeah. Right. Also, he doesn't have that much agency. He's just a dog. Like it's. He's not,
or is he? He seems to know.
He does.
Well, he's not Lassie, whatever. I did like that he's sort of mystical, like he pre-meets Kate.
I
like aspects of that. You know, like it fits in with that whole weird fairy tale-ish sort of thing going on.
Ethereal, It's got
ethereal.
Definitely,
that's a much better word for
thank
it.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you. words. It's what I do.
Anti-penultimate. If you think I've forgotten about anti-penultimate.
He's got a real anti-penultimate
feel to
him.
You should think about that. I also had a conspiracy. So first of all, even knowing the Jack Duquesne swordsman connection to me seems like in tradition, in the way that the MCU has handled these things before, is to do a lot of fake outs, which makes me sitting there wondering, like, well, first of all, I think it's pretty clear her mom is evil.
I mean, she is in the comic book, right? Like,
I can't remember how much they go.
She's bad. She's kind of. Well, she's fairly bad in the comic book.
Is it her or is it? No, I think it's her dad, because her dad is kind of part of a shadowy cabal. I thought she had a stepmother in the comics.
Oh, maybe it's the stepmother.
I think the dad is a villain too, because he's part of the cabal that's trying to like track down
Clint. I can't remember now. I'd have to
And it's clearly it's only like tips of the hat here and there, right? Like, yeah, they're not pulling directly from that comic, even though a lot of the
And you can't even even if I could remember, it's like
you can't draw a parallel.
Can't say.
But
do we think the dad's dead?
No, I think the dad. First of all, I think. Here's the thing.
Wait, this, okay, we're going into conspiracy.
We're in the we are firmly in conspiracy corner territory.
It's conspiracy podcast.
It's conspiracy podcast. I'm not sure if the if he's dead or not, but I think that if he is, that the mother killed him rather than it being and then used essentially the invasion as cover. Or just was lucky enough that it like destroyed the evidence, probably.
Yeah, because she says she reveals some kind of agility / Hawkeye level ability with stuff when she hits the table and gets a carrot to jump into her mouth. It's weird. It's like one weird trick, you know?
Yeah,
but right after that, she says, okay, I'll be right with you. I'm going to go downstairs for a sec.
Yes, that felt
which is like
weird.
Why put that unless it does separate the characters? It explains why Kate is upstairs and the other one isn't. Like, but that makes
and
sense.
It's also, it could be as simple as that, as letting Kate have that moment.
But it's also there's also something weird about the dynamics like between her and Kate. Like, it's clear that Kate loves her dad, right? And they have a really close bond.
Oh yeah,
and it's clear that it's not as close with her mother,
right?
Like, because I mean, maybe
she even says moms can be fun too, and then does one weird carrot trick,
which made me wonder if like maybe. Maybe she wasn't. Maybe she is her stepmom. Like, maybe that's just, I don't know. Could be. But also,
she doesn't call. I mean, call out. That's not mentioned anywhere. It seems
it's not at all. That's just there's a weird, there's a weird dynamic again. Like, it was
there's
unclear.
There's enough going on that I feel like we would have, like, a you're not my mom moment.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could
do
be.
You know what I mean?
Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would have mentioned it at the beginning where, you know, like, she doesn't like her because she's not her mom, you know. Like,
but the other thing
that struck me... And her dad has, like, the vibe of a scoundrel, right? Like, he's got... It's not quite the Han Solo look, but he's got, like, that
sleeveless little
jacket going on.
Well,
he's all dressed
like,
in black.
Like, maybe he's a good guy who got into trouble.
I don't know. He also kind of gave me... He kind of gave me, like, also swordsman vibes a little bit. Like, it was a little weird. With the, I don't
they're
know.
They're all the swordsmen.
They're all the swordsmen. They're all Mephisto
he's
and the swordsmen.
He's definitely Mephisto.
But it also
maybe he's just
me,
the knifesman.
It also struck me that that actor is not a like a small time like he that is a notable actor. The actor who plays your dad is Brian Darcy James, who is among other things.
Oh yeah, that's right.
In Spotlight, he played King George III in Hamilton. Like, he is
so
not
you'd
a
expect him to come back. Yeah,
yeah. He seems like a small like not a person that you would cast for 2 minutes of screen time.
It could,
unless he comes
flashbacks.
Back in another
in
flashback.
Which is possible.
Yeah. Although, and this is silly because it's very, very much a Star Trek thing. He had to go tea. So I was like, ooh, maybe.
That's right. I mean, you know.
Maybe a little bit evil. I don't
know. Could be.
Yeah. Like Thomas Riker style.
Yeah.
Peel those sideburns off.
You got to peel those sideburns.
Yes, right. I was wondering if maybe, I don't know if they'll go there, but I was wondering if maybe her mother might be Madame Mask.
I was thinking that too. Yeah.
I just, also, a lot of time again, a lot of time with the characters.
Well, spoiler alert.
I mean, we're just theorizing here.
He's listed on IMDb for more episodes, so.
Okay.
Well, I mean, again, you're not going to cast him, but it's unclear whether or not he plays in flashbacks or something.
Yeah.
I also
number of episodes is probably not a flashback.
I had a question about the scene where Jack offers Kate the butterscotch and she kind of twigs to it, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Do you think he did that on purpose and knows?
Oh, he knows. Yeah. He 100% knows. Yeah.
I thought so. On the,
he's controlling the tracksuit mafia for sure. Well,
I don't.
Sure.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but
word has gotten to him.
I think her mother could be controlling the tracksuit mafia. But.
Oh, sure. Oh, maybe.
But he
definitely knows. Like, just the way he twigs on, like he's inviting her into the sword fight. Like,
I think it's possible he's just her muscle.
Possible
her muscle
or the mother's.
Wait, say that
the
again.
Mother's muscle.
Oh, the mother's muscle.
The mother's muscle. Yeah, right.
Like, maybe, but why would she be marrying him? That feels like a marriage. Either she's being duped, and she does not seem like the kind of person to be duped, or It's a marriage of convenience, you know, like maybe she really loves him,
even though he, you know, whatever. I don't know.
Even though they're both evil. It's a match made in evil heaven.
Yeah, right.
Maybe.
But I mean, believe in love. Yeah. I mean, he's clearly the one set up, as we know. Kate thinks that he killed Armand. We don't have any evidence of that other than all the circumstantial, like he had a sword and he knows how to use a sword, right?
Like, monogrammed butterscotch is enough to put any Agatha Christie fan like on high alert, you know.
It was Agatha Christie all along.
Yeah.
Oh my god,
I just remember that.
Can we get some Harkness in here, please? Yeah.
Looking at IMDb, I just remembered that there's another shoe to drop here.
Yes, there is another shoe to drop here.
Yeah, so
fill me in, because I would like to.
There's another pew to drop.
There's another Russian to drop.
There's another pew to drop.
Oh, okay, got it.
I like this a lot. I mean, I think that the there's a lot of people who I think have been critical about, like, you know, it doesn't, its connections to the Fraction, and I can never pronounce his name. Is it I or Aha?
David. So here's the thing. I was trying to figure that out because it's either Aja, Aja or Aha, and I don't know. Either one seems, you know, pertinent. But his look and his is amazing. Like, he's the artist on the Fraction, Aja,
right?
Look, and it's really cool. Like, he definitely gave the direction for, well, I don't know, not for the show, but his artwork, and certainly informed the credit sequence that we saw, which is 100%, like, really, really,
yeah,
really cool. And like the fonts that they're using, and even like I'd argue like the visual tone of the show, while you can't render what he did on TV, knocking out details, like having it be not like a real gritty kind of thing, but like a ethereal, as you said, Dan, sort of thing, I think is informed by his work. So
very much so. We should note it does not seem as though he has any involvement with the show, and there have been
some listed in the credits. Yeah,
there's some criticism of Marvel in terms of whether or not they have you know, recompensed him or otherwise credited him. You know, Matt Fraction, who wrote the sort of seminal Hawkeye run, producer, is a consulting producer, and clearly has some, you know, if not input, was at least, you know, given some credit for it. It does seem like Disney has been criticized, or sorry, Marvel and Disney have been criticized for like not crediting the artists as much as the writers, and we should definitely note that, because clearly they did use his work a lot as inspiration here, and he should get full credit for that.
Definitely. And let's just underscore that is a long-standing business practice thing that they have, you know, going back to Stan Lee, may he rest in peace, but like there's,
I guess it's Aya, right? It's not. He's Spanish.
Oh, I thought it might be Aya. Perfect. Yeah, I wasn't.
Aya. Okay, great. I didn't know where we were from. But yeah, like that's not crediting artists is a sort of a tradition.
not a good one to be
kind about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But a lot of people have sort of, you know, been like, well, it doesn't, you know, match up to kind of the adaptation of the comic in my head or whatever, right? But I think, you know, as with everything,
it's not an adaptation.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not meant to be.
Yeah, it's an homage to, if anything, right? Like, you know, because there was no way you could adapt that run. It just simply is set in a world that does not make any. I reread it in the last few months because I was very much anticipating the series, and there's so much in there that is just doesn't fit in with where the MCU is at all.
Right.
So you could not do a one to one adaptation. It would not make any sense.
I love what they've done, which is to take the Ronin period that was mostly off screen, and, you know, deals with the repercussions of that. I think that's a great way to pick up the character. Mm-hmm. And we actually haven't talked about Clint yet at all.
Yeah.
Which is cool.
Who cares about that guy?
Yeah. Well, Kate's pretty cool. I like her.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that, you know, it makes sense to pick up this character from that little dark spot. Well, little dark spot. He murdered a bunch of people from that period of his life, and run with it. And it does open up all of this kind of stuff. Like, well, I made a lot of enemies. Like, whoever wore that costume, and he never says it was him in this entire show. It obviously was, but he doesn't cop to it. There's going to be repercussions from that, and it opens up a whole bunch of storytelling in terms of, like, well, who who's mad at you, why are they mad at you, what's going on. And we've got it makes sense that he wants that costume. It's not just random MacGuffin. It's not Tony's watch that he wants to go after. Right. It's that costume, because whoever's got that, A, that's a deep shame for him. B, whoever's wearing that costume is going to get killed, like a lot more than they think they're going to get killed.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think it's interesting, you know, so Clint is not a character we spent a ton of time with in the movies. He's usually been a background character. We've seen like a little tidbits here and there, but you know, he never got his own movie or anything like that. I like what they've done with him here, because he is, you know, as much as say Sam Wilson, he is a guy who is good at something, but he is not a superhero in the sense of he is not superpowered. And so exploring that through his eyes, where like he's very, you know, embarrassed in some ways. And it's not quite the right word, or like embarrassed, but like he is very
like when he has dinner bought for him.
Yeah, he doesn't. He's very like uncomfortable with that level of fame, right? He is a guy who is fundamentally like, he was like a covert operative, right? He was a SHIELD agent, and
he's not like, you know, the guy in the bathroom. He's not super friendly either. You know?
Right, like, right.
Like, that was the wrong place for that, obviously, too. But I mean, like, you think Cap would handle that differently, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean,
he would, sure, but let's finish up here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Not do it right now.
Tony would just sign it right there.
Cap would just look at him and just turn. Cap would just look at him, keep peeing like a racehorse, and say, I could do this all day.
Oh, Jesus.
by the way, if you want to hear the rest of that song, that horrible, horrible song, it is on as on most of the streaming services now.
I enjoyed how bad it was. I also loved that, like, they're talking about how hot Thor is, and like none of those actors are as good. Sorry,
no.
I'm sure they're all beautiful people, of course, but like they're not as good looking as they like the actual people, which is kind of funny.
But the staging and production of that is just fabulous. It's just fabulous. Yeah. Like the
Hulk in a hoodie is pretty funny,
and you know everything about
with like
that.
A Star Trek rock in his hands, like it's like a styrofoam piece
that
of crap.
I love the Ant-Man.
Ant-Man is there
for
he's
no
not
reason
supposed to be.
And did they make him Asian?
Yeah,
I couldn't see the guy.
I think he is an Asian guy too.
I don't know, it's just very, it's very random. I mean, I like that they also don't necessarily, they don't hit you too hard on some of these things. Like Clint is clearly having like a little bit of not quite PTSD, but you know, some sort of
for
some level,
certainly, you know, fixated on Nat,
but the Nat character, right? Like, but they never say it outright, which I think
his daughter does.
Yeah,
what's that?
Yeah, she. His daughter does say something about, you know,
we all miss her, but I know she was your best friend.
Yeah, but like in the moment while he's reacting to it, I think it's not like they didn't do a flashback to him dropping, you know, them fighting it out on Vermeer, right? Like and having they trust the audience enough to let you know, like, okay, we know what the relationship between those characters was.
Yeah, he's having conflict. He's having conflicted opinion or.
The best
about
flashback is when she asks why is he hearing? What's wrong with his ears?
I love that one. Yeah,
it's too hard. Too
Wait, what was the giant? What was the giant explosion?
That's Endgame. It's when Thanos blows up the compound.
Okay, got it. Because it was all green, and I flash back to when the island blew up on Arrow. I'm like, wait,
I spent way more money.
That'd be funny.
Yeah,
I was on an island for 5 years.
I would love that. I wish that had, like, instead of Katniss Evergreen, I just wish that had a Green Arrow. Like, come on.
They probably, lawyers probably didn't clear that one.
Yeah, they probably didn't.
That would have been such really a bummer. That. Like, I don't know. I mean, if I was running these things, I'd be like, yeah, you could play with my toys. But like a little Green Arrow shout out would have been so funny.
It is interesting how they handle his hearing impairment, right? Like that is a thing in the comics, although it kind of comes and goes as is convenient.
Like superpowers, right?
Here the implication seems to be more that, like, you know, this is a thing in the comics. It's a thing since he was a kid, I believe, at least in some of the versions. Okay. There are like flashbacks in the Fraction run to him as a kid.
Yeah, right. That's right.
And his brother, like, having to figure that out. I thought it was interesting. Like, so his kid is clearly, one of his kids is clearly learning, you know, parts of sign language, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, which is adorable. Mm-hmm. I thought that was so cool.
It was very cool.
It's his youngest kid.
Yeah. And I like, I'm very interested in how they continue to handle that. But yeah. I think it's great to, again, for purposes of sort of representation and inclusion and all that, like having a character dealing with a disability, you know, especially one that doesn't necessarily relate to, it's not like Daredevil, right? Where it's like, oh, he's blind, but he's got superpowers that mean he can basically see as well as, if not better than, a person with vision, yeah. right? Like, this is something that's like though. Ancillary yeah. to him being, he's still a superhero. It doesn't necessarily, you know, affect to or play into his abilities other than, you know, the way that a disability would for a normal person. But it's and not I presented lo- as a power, right? Like, which is
right. Yeah, and I love that it is connected to him. Just like, I'm old, but I don't know how old he is.
I mean, old, just like
he's 50.
It's not the years; it's the mileage.
Is he 50?
Yeah,
is
yeah.
He, Renner, is the character 50
now? I know, you know, so he was probably 49 when this was filmed, but
sure, yeah, he's
yeah, he, and he looks old. You know, I was noticing that he kind of looks.
He's getting older.
He's getting older, which is you know, and I mean that. So the timing is good.
Yeah, I like it. It's like, you know what? If you've been superheroing around and getting blown up a lot, even if you're awesome, well, it totally makes sense that you're hearing would I mean, get
it's like,
shot.
It's like a, yeah. it's, you know, it's a slightly less contentious issue than, say, like football players, right? Like, you get beat up a lot, right? Like, it has an effect right. on you.
Yeah, yeah, that's really no good. But, I mean, he'd probably be suffering that too with all those explosions. But yeah, I liked it. But the way he deals with it too is like kind of like, I got a bum knee or when it rains, my shoulder hurts kind of vibe, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a thing that he lives with and he's been toughing it out his whole life. So it's not played or he doesn't play it as like a major thing that's holding him down. It's just like, it's just another thing that I've got to deal with like this, you know, kink in my back sort of thing. But I do love that his kid is learning sign language. That's really cool. And he learned it too,
right.
which is telling, right? Like he's accepted that like, okay, at some point my hearing's going to totally gone. I'm going to have to sign.
Yeah.
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 Right.
I liked his relationship with Kate. You know, it's kind of very much like I'm putting up with this kid. But it, you know, I think he starts to develop at least over the first couple episodes, a grudging respect for her. You know, there's the scene where she shoots the arrow out the window and hits the Molotov cocktail. You know, and, I particularly enjoyed, the scene where he has to give her his phone number, and is like, yeah, but if you call me for anything other than emergency, I'm going to block and delete you. Yeah. It's also, in case you know, it's a burner phone. Like,
right. Yeah.
Which, cause he's got another phone at various points.
It's the one it's the one that Steve gave Tony.
Right. Exactly. They've only got one. They can't find any new flip phones.
He's like, can I have that when you're done with it?
They argue about his branding, like you said, like mm-hmm. and she's just a pain to him, but also his relationship to her. What I like about his relationship to her is even the comics, I will say about this run, the run is also always a little bit dicey in portraying Kate and Clint's relationship because it can't quite decide if they're mentors or something more. Whereas very clearly in this, it is, if anything, a sort of surrogate father-daughter relationship.
Right.
And that's good. That is the way to handle it. And it helps because Clint has the family too, right? So like he is a dad. Yeah. And those instincts kick in to a certain extent.
Yeah, the comic book, you know, at least the main comic book, Clint is more of a
what's the right word?
Not quite philanderer, but he
gets around.
He's not married, but he, I mean, I guess he does get married a few times, but he's not married very long.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, but as soon as he unmasks her, first of all, he grabs her out of the car and like manhandles her into the alleyway.
Yeah.
At this point, not knowing, just knowing that this person is in danger. Anything, like, yeah. And as soon as he like the mask comes off, he's like, "Oh, come on!" Because he's not gonna beat up a young girl. It's just like, oh, this sucks. Like, what are you doing? He just ends up in a situation that he didn't want to be in. He what he wanted to be in was meeting Grylls and being like, look, I can punch you in the face and take your costume, or you can just give it to me. That's what I want. Like, I think he would feel okay with punching Grylls in the face and taking the costume. It's like, look,
sure,
you're a grown man. Give me my thing. You don't want it.
You stole this.
Here we are. Here's the thing. But he's not going to do that to a young girl. It's like, it reminds him too much of his daughter, who is a star of the show. I love that his older son is just treated like an idiot. I love that. I love it. It's like, no, I told him you're in charge, but obviously you're in charge. Of course you're in charge.
Yeah, I do think that's the family dynamic, I think, is great. I particularly loved, and my wife really appreciated as well, that when he talks to his wife on the phone, and I know I'll pause for Guy to mention Linda Cardellini.
Yeah.
is the mic not picking up my heart beating?
But I love that he reads her in on everything, right? Like, she is engaged.
She already knows.
She knows his moves. Like, you know, she like catch release. Yeah.
Well, and
catch
release. He clearly told her about the costume, which means she knows all about Ronin.
Oh, while you were gone, I went on a murder spree?
Yeah. That's a heavy... You got to come clean to your wife about that, right?
Like, she knows who the tracksuit mafia is.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I love all of that.
She knows that they're dumb, which I love.
Right.
Like,
I love that it's the exact antithesis of what we always complained about on the CW shows, where everybody's keeping secrets, right? They're like, this is what's going on. I got to fix this problem.
And that ties into him being on the phone with her in Age of Ultron saying, I work for you.
Right. Yes. Yep.
Or I report to you, I think is what he says.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that too. They have a great relationship, including that Nat, sex bot. Well, she's not really a sex bot because she's not overly sexual in the MCU. But it's never a question that like Nat's just his best friend. Like it's not a thing. It's like, she's Auntie Nat. Yeah. She comes to meet the family. There's no problems. Everything's cool. Yeah. Nobody's worried.
Yes.
I love that. Like, he's got such a great relationship with his wife.
I think they have a little bit of the same relationship that, you know, started out a little bit like probably his relationship with Kate is starting out, because they're kind of playing the Wolverine thing with, you know.
Yeah.
From the X-Men movie and from the comic books as well.
Yeah,
so Wolverine keeps taking like young women under his wing all the time. Yeah,
right.
There is very much a mentor thing. I mean, we saw that very alluded to somewhat in the Black Widow movie as well, obviously. And we saw their relationship in the Avengers movies. I think that is, it's nice, right? You know, first of all, you need to be able to portray men and women as being able to have platonic friendships, because it happens.
Exactly.
But you know, it also, it's rare in almost all of these movies. I think maybe Scott Lang being the only other character who really has like a family that we see a lot of. I mean, a little bit Tony and towards the end in Endgame, basically. Yeah. But
Steve has a heartthrob, but not a relationship.
Well, yeah, I mean,
like, you know, he's always true to Peggy, no matter what. Right. But it's like, it is as idealized as his character,
right? We never really see the inside of their relationship, because it never really gets to that point.
Yeah,
right. Their relationship is as abstracted as like the American way, truth and justice. Like, it's like, what does that actually mean? Like, we don't see it working.
Yeah. But having the sort of family dynamics, I think, for Clint is really solid, and it brings a very different, along with him being sort of unpowered, right? Like, it brings a very different experience to that whole, you know, perspective, right? Like, a whole perspective of being a superhero. It's like, well, I'm not only am I a person who doesn't have any powers, but I'm also, like, you know, looking out for my kids and my wife and trying to make sure my family's okay, and I don't want to be here like fighting Russian mobsters on Christmas. Yeah. I would rather be at home.
Yeah. Right. What do you think? I mean, he does have an obligation there, right? Like, when he decides to stay for a couple of days, it's to clean out the mess that he made his road in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't have any doubt that, not too much of a spoiler to say this, but, you know, with a 6-episode series and based on the tone of this, I don't actually doubt that he'll make it home by Christmas. I feel like that's the tension we're setting up, but the...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, she also said, 5 days? And
right. We have a ticking
six
clock.
Episodes.
Ticking clock. So you need that, like, that aspect to make
classic,
it feel.
You know, it's a classic of the genre, right? It's, dad, will dad make it home for Christmas? But yeah. Dad is a Fuller Brush salesman.
Or a archer slash vigilante.
It goes all the way back to the Walton movie, yeah, the original Walton movie.
So Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Anyways, so yeah, I think that they've done a nice job of setting up all these different aspects. And we've got like Clint's story, we've got Kate's story. They're clearly dovetailing. We've got the time pressure, we've got Christmas. Like, there's just a lot. They've packed a lot into these, at least these first two episodes. And part of me is like, man, this feels like it could have been longer than six, but I'm glad, because it will feel like, you know, if they do it well,
tight,
there's no filler.
It's tight.
Well,
it's better. Yeah. I mean, like,
exactly. You
know, foundation. Oof.
I haven't
in the middle.
I haven't finished like, that yet.
I thought the beginning and the end were pretty good, but the middle, oh, God.
Yeah, same.
The only middle I think about in Foundation is Lee Pace's middle. Like, that guy. Wow. Wow. Would I ever walk to my death in the desert with Lee Pace?
Stupid,
that guy.
Sexy Lee Pace.
Holy cow. That is an attractive fella.
Yeah. You're not wrong.
Sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Yeah, sure.
Right. Why do we... So, we're two episodes in, everything's set up, basically. The third one is, I don't know, penultimate? Is that it? I don't know. It's
anti-penultimate.
It's the hump,
it's not
right?
It's not.
Like, anti-penultimate.
We've got six episodes. The third one seems like we've got a...
Pre-anti-penultimate.
We need to sort of introduce Clint to the actual stuff that's going on, right?
Yeah, it does feel a little bit like,
I would guess so.
We got the Echo reveal at the end there, though we don't know really, you know, in the context of the show, we don't know who she is.
There are a lot of moving parts right now.
Yeah, exactly.
You got the swordsman, you got her mom, you have Echo, you have the tracksuits who are just basically
thugs, yeah.
Bro,
like, yeah, like muscle.
There's no
stormtroopers. Whatever, it's fine. They're funny. They're legitimately really funny, which is awesome.
I love it
when he starts like, he gets all butthurt about like having picked a bad
location,
empty warehouse. It's like,
yeah, right.
They're all getting converted into
it's a loft.
Condos.
There's a valid
complaint.
It's a totally valid thing. It's like, real estate crunch hurts everybody. But
there's a good throwaway bit, which I didn't catch until I had the captions on, but where they when they throw in the Molotov cocktails in Kate's apartment, and then the pizza place guys come out and start arguing with them.
Oh, yeah.
There's a guy off screen who just goes, "My tracksuit."
Yes,
I enjoyed.
I love that the guy gets lit on fire, and the other guy's like, "Bro, you're on fire!" He's like, "No, I'm fine."
And they put the bag over his head, and he's like, "Guys, he's I can see through the bag."
but those guys coming out and yelling to the tracksuits, and that's a great New York moment, really. I mean, that's just classic. You know, they're not really going to have a big beef about it, but they're going to yell at each other for sure.
Yeah. It's perfect. Also, I really like that the tracksuits are not murder machines. Like, when they bust into the auction, they don't kill anybody. They're like, "Let's just get the stuff and go." Like, they don't, they've got guns, but let's say, "Well, we're not going to just shoot every one of you," which would have been effective for sure.
Yeah.
But that's not why they're there. That. Yeah.
That's not why.
It's also not that kind of show, I don't think. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, exactly. Like, I think that's good, right? It lets you have attention without
it's a Christmas show.
I love that. Yeah. I mean, I love that Clint, when he's signing up to do the LARPing thing and they're explaining the rules, and he's like so violent, you know.
I really love Grylls' thing, which is like, "You get to be a superhero in real life, just give this to me." And Clint's like, "Okay, fine."
But isn't he a firefighter? Like, isn't the implication
that he is,
a
which firefighter? Is an actual,
like, you are actually a
firefighter. Is an actual real, honest to God, superhero. Like, that's as close as it gets. You know, not to be contentious, but probably more so than a policeman. Like, that's like legit awesome. Like, you run into a burning building and save lives. And if you want, you know, if you want the pleasure of killing Clint, cool. I dig it. I do love that Clint's like, "Oh, I fought Thanos."
Yeah.
Okay. Fine. Like how
they
far?
They offer him some fake, you know, some potion.
Yeah.
Like, "All right, you know what? You're gonna drink it. Okay, fine." You know,
I love the guy in the crowd.
I can't stop you.
I love the guy in the crowd. Like, "Oh my God, he didn't take the potion." Okay.
Well, I also enjoy,
and then it doesn't come up, you know, like
it doesn't. Whatever. Why would it?
I will say, I thought they did a a pretty good job of treating the LARPers with like humor, mm-hmm. but also not treating them like total dorks, basically.
Like jokes, like complete jokes. Yeah,
yeah, like they're like, look, this is all cops and firefighters. Like, we're just here to like unwind and do our thing.
Yeah, you know? You got the sense that they were blowing off steam and having a good time and obviously being silly. But I mean, whatever. We've all played D&D.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fun. It's fine. Not my thing, but it's cool that they're doing it. Like, that's not a problem. And even Clint is like, he's okay with it. You know, he's just like, I don't.
He said he was glad he did it.
Yeah. He's like, I had a good time.
Yeah, but could you take these back? Because I got my credit card. Yeah, they will charge you. Everything with the signing up scene is pretty great, right? Like, name, please. Email,
name,
I'm not
having
my name associated with this.
I so want to use that. I'm like, I don't know, at a grocery checkout line when they're asking you for, like, what's your area code, zip code for you guys?
That's classified.
No, thanks. The email address, I totally believe in this. That he has one that's classified. It's like, nah, I'm not going to.
Also, because they walk the line, right?
Org, like,
yeah. Yeah. Well, they walk the line, right, with, like, you know, a lot of people know who he is, and the level of response to him is very different, right? Like, grills and...
She had respect, though. Yeah.
Right. I love that the woman's like, look, I know who you are, right? Like, but I'm not, I'm not, like, falling all over myself. But,
oh,
like,
yeah, right. Yeah. We don't bend the rules for you.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. Yeah. That's so, it's so good. Like, if it were Cap, like, Cap would be into it, right? Like, he wouldn't even ask to, like, break the rules. He'd be like, oh, yeah, no, I totally respect this. Let's do this process.
Right.
Maybe I don't know what Sam would do. I think Sam would probably pull the same thing that Clint.
Yeah, I think Sam would basically.
He'd be like, oh, okay, and Bucky would be like, "What the
Bucky
hell?"
Bucky would just walk away,
but like secretly would be really into it.
He would really He would throw everybody left and right and grab the suit.
Yeah, he'd punch his robot arm through somebody's chest and then feel really, really bad about it.
He's not a role model necessarily.
No, didn't work out that way.
Should we do a rating?
Sure. One more thing. I just Kate's aunt, Moira Brandon, was a character from West Coast Avengers who owned the mansion that they purchased, I guess. In the first episode of West Coast Avengers, she dies. Like, they're buying the mansion from her, and then, like, something happens. Somebody invades or something like that, and I think she dies, like, helping them fight off whoever it is.
But
she's like an old... She's an old woman who... And then she's on those posters, so she's a movie star.
Interesting. I missed that.
Yeah, something of the galaxy, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Right. Almost Guardians of the Galaxy, but it was like bad guys or something.
We didn't specifically talk about Hailee Steinfeld either, which I think we should probably mention before we go. Which is, I mean, I always thought of her as, to me, I mean, I think the first time I saw her on screen was in True Grit. In which she plays the kid, she's great in that movie, and like she has gotten a well-deserved career out of, you know, basically after that fact, and I think she is fantastic here. She's really kind of,
and I really enjoyed Dickinson.
And I think she's just kind of done a great job of capturing who this character is. I mean, like, this feels very Kate Bishop to me from the comics. I mean, like, maybe a little bit younger played, but like just cocky, and I mean, essentially a match in some ways, you know, in most ways for Clint, right? Like,
Who I like is he cracks jokes more in the Avengers. Like, he's a more relaxed guy around the Avengers than he is with her, which makes complete sense, because with her, he's just like, look, I just want to get this done. I need to
keep you
safe.
Well, he's got to worry about her, too.
I've got to worry about you. Like, we're not going to have fun. I don't want you thinking that we're having fun here, because if you think we're having fun, you're going to want more fun, and that's not on the table. It's got to go. And I liked it. And having him be the straight man works really well to her. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just randomly going to try stuff, even though I'm kind of not great at it. Like, yeah, she's awesome.
Well, she's so
she's clearly awesome.
I mean, she's so funny, and
But she That's can carry delivery. The show playing against Renner as more of a straight man Hawkeye.
Very good like chemistry between the two of them. Like, they're just their rapport is really great, and I think that's good because it's such an important part of this show that you really
without being
need
creepy,
the
which we've said
that.
Before. Like, there's never a feeling that he's attracted to her at all. It's just like, okay,
it's not, he's not like in this universe, that kind of guy.
I do enjoy the scene where she's, you know, tried to bandage herself up, and he's just like, you did this entirely wrong. Like,
I love that. Yeah, I love that. That felt like taking care of your kid kind of thing. Which well, is like, okay, and how you screwed it, this it is, up. Let me, because he walks her through what to do, right? Okay, you got to, it's a deep cut. It's a deep scratch, I think he says, you know, then like, you want to do it perpendicular so it starts healing. And then later on, we see him with bandages that are perpendicular to his own cut.
Right. I mean, and again, it goes to the fact that he is a guy who doesn't have any special powers, so has gotten beaten up a lot, right? Like, he's not a super healing kind of guy like Cap or something, right? He's a guy who gets beat up and then goes home and pours disinfectant on his wounds and puts band-aids on. Yeah. All right. Well, let's do a rating, shall we, Guy?
This is a swordsman. This is a giant mustache.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, really.
This is Biff with a giant mustache. It's a good show. I have enjoyed it so far. I'm really looking forward to seeing where they go, and I like what they're doing. So far, I've really enjoyed every character that they've introduced. The uncle did sort of remind me of F. Murray Abraham, and I was like, oh man, I wish that guy was F. Murray Abraham, because he's awesome.
It's Simon Callow, who was in a bunch of stuff.
He's also cool, but they killed him immediately anyway. And I'm like,
if he's cloned, he'll be back. You
know? Yeah, maybe. But yeah, I liked it a lot. I think calling it Hawkeye, well, obviously it makes sense, because, you know, you're not going to call it the Clint Barton Show. But it's
the Clint Barton Show with special guest Kate Bishop and whoever his band leader is. The dog? I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I think it's great. And I think it is a sort of a passing of the baton, special arrow sort of thing to Kate. And I dig it. I like it.
John?
It's a Biff. It's a pizza dog Biff. Good. It's nice, lighthearted thing. It's a great Christmas. You know, it's perfect for the season, and which is delightful. You know, it's like a different tone than I think it's a little bit. You know, I mean, I think it's a little bit better at what I wanted Falcon and Winter Soldier to be. Mm. We got a little bit of sort of like the buddy road trip thing, but this is much more of what I was hoping we'd get out of that show. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to the rest of it.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I can't help but compare it to Falcon and Winter Soldier as well, just because I think there are some synergies in terms of dealing with the people who are the unpowered versions, unpowered members of the Avengers, and dealing with like mantles and legacy and all that. I think Falcon and Winter Soldier just had a harder road to hoe, as it were, like, you know, in terms of all the things they had to deal with in order to get there. And so it never let them sort of entirely cut loose with sort of the fun and wacky adventures. Or when it did, it felt like, well, is this a fun and wacky show, or is this
their first episode show?
You know,
their first episode was amazing, though.
I mean, they did some great work. It just didn't entirely. I think they were a little stuck between two worlds in terms of what story they were going to tell.
Did you guys think it was janky, like when she shot the fire extinguisher and it went flying? The smoke looked like the most
I thought it was funny, but yes, it's not the most amazing. I mean, our friend Joe Rosenseal will, I'm sure, have a lengthy thread.
does he already have one that I should go read?
No, I haven't seen it. I'm just saying, I know. Our friends who work in VFX, often I find them do critical takes of special effects and shows, so I'm sure somebody will. But
it looked real janky compared to like the Falcon and the Winter Soldier opening set piece, which was like insane.
Yeah.
I mean, this one felt way more like, okay, let's, you know, keep the money in the piggy bank for this one, which works. It was fine.
I think it's fine. And again, we're dealing with something. I think that it relies less on superhero. Like, they spent clearly a lot of money on doing the flashback at the beginning with the Battle of New York. But other than that, this show is not a show that spends a lot of time on, like, so far, big flashy set pieces or anything like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, to round it out, it is a Biff for me. I enjoyed it quite a bit. I'm really looking forward to the next few episodes. Love the Christmas theme. Love the cast. Just curious to see how they're going to tie this all together, because as we said, a lot of stuff happening.
Right.
All right. We will be back later this week. I know you're going to get two episodes out of us this week to talk about Hawkeye episode 3 and also to cover the most recent episode of Legends of Tomorrow. But I think actually that is all we have time for today. So let's wrap this up by thanking my co-hosts. Guy English, thanks for being here.
Bro, my pleasure, bro.
John Moltz, always a pleasure.
I'd eat some pizza off the floor. I'm not proud.
I've seen you eat pizza off the floor.
That's why we call him Pizza Man? I don't know. I mean, Pizza Moltz?
Human.
Pizza Moltz. Thank you everybody out there for listening. Please send us your thoughts, your conspiracy theories. We love them. I mean, conspiracies about the show, let's be clear. Don't send me your non-Hawkeye conspiracy theories,
yeah,
please.
Yeah. Havana syndrome and voting fraud. I will not read that mail.
Yeah. but hit us up at BiffCast on Twitter or Biff at theincomparable.com.
Oh, shirts. I have five. No fewer than five Hawkeye shirts for sale.
How many shirts do you have, Maltz?
Go to cottonbureau.com and search on BiffCast if you're interested. How many shirts total do I have? For like, oh my God, 3, 6, 9, 12, 15.
You can't count that high.
18, 21, 24, 27.
My God, 30? John, do you have a problem?
Thirty-nine. Looks like I've got 39. Oh, some of them aren't visible to everybody, but so it's probably more like 36.
So, dear reader, is there a month of your life that you don't have a shirt planned for?
Is there a day of the month you don't have a shirt planned for?
A day of the month. Yeah. That's probably more.
One shirt.
Shirt of the day of the month club.
One shirt every day for a month, plus a few extras when you Hulk out and you rip them open.
We didn't talk about the Thanos was right graffiti.
I really want to talk about that. Yeah.
We can talk about
cool. That. Okay, bye.
We'll do that.
I'll email you.
Yeah. Do you have a Thanos was right shirt?
I do have a Thanos was right shirt.
Oh God. Okay. We'll talk. Let's save that for the end of the next show, I guess, because I love that scene. Yeah. Right. Or that little look on his face.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you later this week.